This is a HeadGum Original.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Thorin, you gave a promise.
You brought upon them only ruin and death.
You've won the mountain, is that not enough?
Now, we defend it.
I came to reclaim something of mine.
Last move in a master plan. A plan long in the making.
These bats are bred for one purpose. For war.
Leave Sauron to me.
Bilbo is ready.
You cannot see what you have become.
Everything I did for them.
You started this. You will forgive me if I finish it.
When faced with death, what can anyone do?
I will not hide. When others fight our battles for us!
You have but one question to answer. How shall this day end?
Oh boy, it's another episode of Newcomers, and I am Nicole Byers.
You came into that so freshly excited. It felt like you were excited. I just felt excited to hear you. I'm Lauren Lapkus. We're watching The Lord of the Rings for the first time and everything else that entails, which, by the way, is many things, apparently.
So many things. Books and all the movies and Hobbit spinoffs and stuff. So
have you watched the books yet?
We have not watched the books. The books.
Okay. We're going to just push them against our heads and hope they get it.
Just hold a book on either side of my head and be like, oh my God. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but there's this meme of this little boy. I guess it's not a meme. It's just a video. He's like in China or somewhere and he's in school and he's got his book open and he's scooping the words into him. It's so precious.
I love that.
Anyway, Lord of the Rings.
We are, this is the seventh episode of the new season. And of course, last season we did all of Star Wars. And, you know, we're going through the franchise with the help of nerds, super fans, sometimes even people who've contributed to the movies. And we started with the Lord of the Rings trilogy that came out throughout the 2000s. But now we're watching all of the Hobbit movies where we wrote some fan fiction, which was really sexual and moving. we're going to check out the spinoffs. We're going to watch animated movies, as Nicole said. We're going to do it all. So today we're talking about The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies. And you can rent it on Amazon Prime for $3.99 or stream it on Sling.
Yep. So this is the last film in the Hobbit film trilogy. So we're talking about The Hobbit, the Battle of Five Armies. I'll tell you something. I was like, who the fuck are these armies and why are they fighting again? I was so confused.
I don't know. And so much. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Well, let's
so
just.
So much has happened.
I mean, what did where? How do you feel about this movie overall? Just the real quick. Did you hate it?
Real quick. Okay. I didn't hate it. I think I liked it the most out of the three.
Oh.
But I will say this. How dare you end the second movie with this cliffhanger and then Smaug comes and burns up everybody and then immediately dies?
I agree. That was a huge problem for me. I was like, why don't we see that at the end of the second movie? And then this movie is the result of that. I don't know why. We had to, I mean, of course, we only waited a week. There are people who waited a year to see that. And then it was like over in an instant. It's just, it's crazy. It's like having a crush on someone and then you finally have sex and it's bad.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Watching Smaug die so quickly was like a bad fuck.
Yeah, so I was really shocked by that because I thought that Smaug was going to play like a big role in this one.
Same.
And
seems like he probably should. Sorry.
He should. We should introduce our guests. Yes. We're really excited about our guest today. Zach Reno. Zach is a performer, writer, composer who has appeared on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, AP Bio, Party Over Here, Conan, Comedy Bang Bang, Adam Ruins Everything, and more. And he's also the star of the College Humor Go 90 series, Fatal Decision.
Whoa, rest Welcome, in peace, Go 90.
I was like, what is Go 90 as I'm
That's
saying
an
it? Because
excellent
I,
question.
I truly recall when that was a big deal that everyone was talking about.
Go 90 was from Verizon?
Yeah, so Go 90 was Verizon's sort of idea where like, how can we make our customers use up their data plan very, very quickly?
Oh,
and the sort of solution to that was Go 90. But that was a very fun show that I did with College Humor that was at the time, like the longest acting paycheck I had ever had, which
was
great.
That's always good.
That is good.
We also, as you mentioned, you're on Brews Brothers with my husband, Mike Castle.
Yes, loved that.
And you are the host of Off Book, which is amazing.
So incredible.
The podcast that everyone should listen to if you haven't heard it yet.
Y'all have both done it. It's so much fun.
So good. Not because like we're friends, but like you and Jess are so fucking talented.
Oh, yeah.
It's an improvised musical and it's like from start to finish so much fun.
Thanks, friends. It's
every
it's
time
such a joy.
I hear you guys do what you do, I am completely in awe. I'm like, this is a very special skill.
Yes.
It is the result of not being good at anything else. It is like truly.
That's how we're all here.
Yeah. But it's like, it is like the laser focus within, like if you spend a ton of time on improv, the outside world is like, what are you doing? Now picture that and push all of that into like musical improv.
Yeah.
And it's even, it has, but yeah, I mean, we've been very, I'm very lucky to have such like Jess is so incredible and
she's
so much
great. You guys are
so much fun to work with. And it, luckily, like we get to do a bunch of musical written stuff. So I guess we do sort of like flex those muscles in other places. But yeah.
No, I think also like, well, just really quickly about that, just that the podcast world has been so helpful in the sense that you guys could do that on stage all day and like everyone's like amazed, but like getting to do it on a podcast where you can reach people and add in all the like instruments and all that stuff, it's so amazing.
Yeah, for people that like don't have a big improv theater in their city, it's podcasts have been very cool for that.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we're changing lives.
We really are, one day at a time.
Basically, we're making the biggest difference.
Yes. Wait, Zach, how did you become a Lord of the Rings fan and why?
Sure. I've been... Lord of the Rings was sort of my gateway into a bunch of other fandoms. Like those, I read the books first, and then I read The Hobbit. At some point, I watched the original Hobbit movie. So short, so animated, so
Not
concise.
Not to interrupt,
and yeah, please, please.
People keep saying they read the books first. Who gave them to you? No one ever suggested in my life to read them. They weren't like in school, part of the curriculum.
No, that's a good question. My gut is to say that my dad gave them to me because he had read them. He is not, by the way, like a fantasy nerd by any stretch, but he did sort of like take in all of the cultural touchstone. Like there's a sci-fi trilogy called Foundation, which is Isaac Asimov, and it is like one of the sort of like seminal sci-fi works, I guess, of like, yeah. And he's read that, but that's very much like the only sci-fi book I've ever heard him say that he mm-hmm. read. So I'm pretty sure that he bought them for me. I also had the books on CD. It was like nine CDs. And I think that must have just been the first book, because it would have been so much longer than that.
Wow.
So like that was my end. And then that sort of got me interested in a bunch of other fantasy authors later in life who arguably, whose writing style I like more than Mr. Tolkien.
What's okay. wrong with Mr. Tolkien's writing style? Tell me about this.
Okay, well, so you know how all the dwarves have the exact same name and everyone is the same name as their dad, except like a couple? It's like, I am Boromir, son of Boromir, who is son of Dorinir, and they come from the mountains. It's like, it's sort of, for lack of a better word, flowery and overly, it actually is too specific. Like when Hobbit and co. wander into a new forest, I actually don't need the last 20 years of what this tree has been up to, like spelled out to me in great detail. And like all of the famous birds and bird lords who lived in the trees and like their great deeds to be sung to me in song and stone is not sort of what I'm here for in this book. I do just need to know how they get out of this forest.
Now I understand why the movies are so fucking long. I didn't know that the books would give you like the history of trees.
Yeah, they're trying to cram a lot in there.
But not The Hobbit, which, and I know y'all have talked about this before, because I listened to what you thought. But the big problem here is like with this movie, not to jump too far ahead, but is like, why is this three movies? There's no reason for it to be three movies.
I would have, and I could have watched like Smaug, like fuck with shit for way longer.
Same. I loved Smaug.
Because Smaug is the villain of The Hobbit. He's not the villain of one third of The Hobbit. He's the villain of all of The Hobbit.
If he was around the whole movie, like let's say he destructed the town in the end of the second one, and then he flew around through the whole war that's happening of the five armies, and then he was the last thing, like more than the orc or whatever. I think that would have been more interesting.
I agree.
Yes. And also like, who would you have made angry with that? Like, is that different from the books? Yes. But like, who is like such a diehard reader of The Hobbit that they're like, well, they're done with the dragon, so this just has to be the armies. And even though we get to it an hour deep into the movie, the last hour and 20 minutes has to just be the armies. I just want to see those. So I have trouble with this. Who are the, there's this five armies in a battle. Yeah. Those armies are the humans, I guess. We can call that an army, even though it's really just a bunch of people that just had their houses burned down. Then there's the orcs. That's definitely an army, right? That one's an army. The elves, that one's an army.
Yes.
The dwarves are not an army for most of it until later when they are an army.
Yes. They get like tough all of a sudden and they're like, we got to do it.
We got to be an army. We're not an army. We need to call my cousin. He's got the army. And then... is the fifth army the goblins?
It's the viewer.
We're the
Yeah, it's we definitely were, the viewer. Were
the fifth army is New York City.
We were the army all along.
Wait, who are the goblins?
There's this moment. They're up in the ice. I don't remember this from The Hobbit, but apparently it happens. They're like, we have to go kill the big orc on the tall ice. We got to get up there and kill that guy. We're so mad at him. And as they're up there, they're like, goblin mercenaries are coming. Seems like about 100 of them. We've got it. And there's two of them.
Wait, is the fifth army the people who come on the eagles led by Rastafarian? Oh.
That's my other question. Are the birds and the bear that they drop the army? Is that the army?
That feels like an army.
I think so.
Okay. I buy that.
Because they kick some ass.
They do. Those eagles, you know the thing about eagles in The Lord of the Rings, because you've seen eagles, right? You saw them at the very end.
They can
end.
Like save the day and shit.
They save the day.
Yeah, they can scoop you up.
But they never show up until you need them.
Because they don't take sides.
But they're, Nicole, you can't sit on the sidelines. That's a choice, right?
You're right, that is a choice.
To be novel, like you're picking sides. If you don't, just because you're not in there, doesn't
why aren't
you're not
they flying
something.
In like right at the beginning and just like scooping up all the dwarves and just like getting them back home. I just want them to go home.
Why are we not dropping the ring directly into the volcano within
yes, legal? That would solve a lot of problems.
And that is what the internet shouts about a lot for the last 20 years, if you want to get into it. That stuff I don't care about so much.
Zach, are you a fan of the Hobbit movies? Because I feel like a lot of Lord of the Ringies don't like the Hobbit movies.
I'm so ambivalent on the Hobbit movies that this movie that I watched for y'all last night is the first of the Hobbit movies I have ever seen. And only one, by the way. I have not seen Unexpected Journey or the other one. I saw the original trilogy in theaters. And when these came out, I was like, I think the fact that I knew from the jump they were doing it in three made me be like, absolutely not. I am not like, there's no reason. I don't need to live in Middle Earth that badly. That's just not the, like, for the people that do, totally get it. No shade. It's just not my thing.
I feel like what I really want is a movie that just takes place in the Shire. Or
Where it's same.
Like, yeah.
Lauren, I was so happy at the end when they were back at the Shire.
And they were like taking all this stuff. And I was like, this is fun. Like, we could have spent an hour here. Well, they were like, he died. Like, they could have had a whole storyline.
No joke. Bilbo going house to house trying to get his shit back from all of his neighbors that have stole it is like a movie I would very much be into.
Yes, I agree. I would be into it.
Oh my God. Okay, well then, so where does this, I mean, obviously it's not your favorite, but where would this rank for you with the Lord of the Rings?
It's my favorite of the three Hobbit movies and the only one I've seen.
Okay.
I love the story of the Hobbit.
Yeah.
But are you asking about this movie specifically? This ranks below this ranks fourth out of four for the four Peter Jackson properties that I have seen.
Now, apparently there was a Lord of the Rings musical being performed several years ago.
In the West End, yeah.
Okay, so you know about this. So if you were going to make the musical, which I think you could easily do, probably right off the top of your head right now. I'm not going to make you do that, but I believe in you. What characters and storylines would you focus on to make this like a good show?
Well, we can do this together. I think y'all know enough about this that we can figure this out. So the first question I think that we need to ask ourselves is the Jurassic Park question. It's like, just because we can doesn't mean we should. Because you should know that the Lord of the Rings musical at the time is, I think, one of the biggest West End flops in the history of the West End.
Dang. Oh,
I'm so surprised when things like this don't do well because it feels like there's such an audience and...
Yeah, I think that was their thought too.
Well, I feel like it's different people. Like different people like Lord of the Rings and different people like musical theater. And then when you put them together, it's like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, and I think that you can even make the argument that those people are the same, but that thing that they like is not the same, right? Mm. Like, I don't know that I need to or want to hear Gandalf singing a big song about you not being able to pass. Like you, I don't know if that's a song
in
the musical.
Minute. I'm sold.
That would be so funny.
But like, it has to be a comedy, right? And this musical 100% was not. It was like, let's do a serious Lord of the Rings musical and like Hobbits will have some fun sometimes.
Yeah.
And like, that's, I don't know who that's for. Like people that love Les Mis, but want, I just don't know. So I think I think you're both right. If you're going to make a Lord of the Rings musical, it's got to be a comedy, like front to back.
Also, was this musical like 3.5 hours, 4 hours long?
Oh, at least.
Oof. How about that Harry Potter musical or whatever that's like 8 hours long?
You have to go back. You can't just, you have to like go, leave for a little bit and then you go back or you see it one day and then the next day.
It is two
plays,
gonna
go see it, but J.K. Rowling's wild. She's an angry woman.
I know. She's done now, honestly.
You actually can't give money to J.K. Rowling anymore for any reason.
No, I would never. Ugh.
Although I was going to say I would never go to something that was that long, but I did last year go see The Inheritance, this play that was like so amazing. And it was like 6 hours or something.
What?
You went there for the first three or however long, and then we went and got dinner, and then we came back and watched the rest. And it was, thankfully, I loved it. So I feel like if you didn't like it, that would be hard to return.
Right.
The next time, but. 6 hours.
What I understand of The Cursed Child, which is a post Harry Potter series play is that a lot of what is fantastic about it is the fact that like it is a sort of masterpiece of stagecraft. Like there's a ton of incredible practical visual, basically magic that happens on stage, because I bought it when it came out and read it front to back and was like, fun. I like the lore. I like that is a world that I do sort of like want to live in or did until recently.
You bought the musical?
No. I bought the book version of the play.
Oh,
like
got
you
it.
Could buy the play. It just came out looking.
Oh,
like
it wasn't
a
book first?
No, this
is just a play.
It's just a play.
Wow, I'm wrong.
That's okay. We're all wrong.
<It's> okay.
Most of the time. But it is too. But McKenna has seen it and loved it and said thought it was like. But she didn't like it after having just read it. So I think it does survive based on like it is a physical marvel to watch. And this Lord of the Rings musical, which I haven't seen but have seen clips of, you do get strong Cirque du Soleil vibes from watching it, where it does feel like, oh, someone's on silks now, like in Lord of the Rings, to do like, it's supposed to be like a visual spectacle, which again, like if Cirque du Soleil were to do a Lord of the Rings themed show that's just like a circus
that
show that looks like
good.
That would be dope. Like I would mess with that 100%.
I really would. I think if that was a thing, I would force Nicole to go to Vegas with me to go see it.
I would go.
Cause like it's Cirque du Soleil. It'll be an hour and a half. Yeah. They'll play like big Enya music with drums and you'll like it. and then you'll watch like people do cool sword fighting stuff. But I don't need to hear them sing. If they're going to sing, we need like you said, like Bilbo trying to get back all of his stuff that his neighbors have stolen. Mm-hmm. That's a musical that I would write 100%.
Yeah, the whole thing is just that.
It's all in the Shire. Yeah. Like Sauron shows up and is like, wait, Sauron, you took my stuff too? He's like, yes, I'm the Dark Lord. And I actually have some of your stuff.
He's like, I needed a rug.
I needed a rug and you were dead. So I did take it. Like that's a great musical. I would really want to focus in. Like I would do the Smaug musical where it's just Smaug sitting on his treasure, killing like wave after wave of people that are coming and trying to like steal his shit.
That's fun. Like, I like
that's
that.
Fun. I would do that. I mean, this is like a deeper cut. There's a character who is in the books who is cut out of the Lord of the Rings movies called, I know, amazing, right? They had to take stuff out of it. His name is Tom Bombadil, the Forest Lord.
We have heard of him.
Yeah, Gabrus likes Tom Bombadil.
Yes, of course I was thinking Gabrus's Mad Simon was cut, and then it was who you said.
It's Tom Bombadil. It's Tom Bombadil, the Forest Lord, and his very special boots. And like, he's a ridiculous character. Could probably do a musical about him.
I mean, I feel like these are all good ideas that should be real.
What about y'all, though? What if you were going to make one?
I think if I were to make one, I would probably not do it. You know, I would just...
Yeah. Honestly, same. Yeah, same.
I would be like, you know, I think I'll take my creativity elsewhere. But maybe I would do it on... So I liked... I can't remember his name, but he looks like Nick Jonas. And then the elf that they put in the movie. I would do my musical on The Hobbit from this movie.
Okay.
With Nick Jonas, one of those... he's not a hobbit. He's a dwarf. He's
but
got
the long
hair.
The dwarf elf romance.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Oh,
it was
I like
forbidden
that.
Love.
A storyline that, by the way, was given no time in this movie.
Truly,
I
at
know.
All.
They really breezed through that.
They needed that fight to be an hour. They didn't have time. They had to do the hour-long fight.
I personally think if I was going to make a musical, I would just do it about the dwarves because they're my favorite. And they did sing. They had that one song.
It's weird.
Not in this one.
Yes. And then they didn't sing again. So it's like they set us up for maybe more musicality and then didn't follow through.
I know. And I was one. And there's like some musical elements of these movies. There's two songs, I guess, that I can think of. But why and why not more? And I think when I saw the dwarves doing the dishes and singing, I was like, this is fun. I like this. It's like Snow White.
It's
on
Snow
crack.
White.
Like,
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I remember when the Hobbit movies were being made and there was like this trailer for it that was basically a documentary, like a mini, like it was like a very quick, like 7 or 10 minute music, like YouTube video or whatever, that was just about like the lore of the making of the good song that they were writing for this movie. And they were like, we're using like the scale of Middle Earth. Like these are the notes in the scale of Middle Earth to write it. And like the music nerd in me can kind of get down with that, except that none of it's really real because like, here are the notes we use in Western music, and it's all of them, and there's not that many of them.
Right, so they're just going to have notes, like, I mean, like, there's not notes we can't hear, so the notes are inherently our notes as
the
well.
The dog music. I mean, there's a little bit of that, like I don't know if y'all have seen or listened to Wicked.
Yes.
When, oh my gosh, am I wrong about this? Stephen Schwartz is Wicked, right? I believe.
Yes, I don't know that.
Anyway, so he has, like, this Ozzian scale that he composed Wicked in, which is like, it's like a musical leitmotif that we do revisit throughout Wicked and to give the world like a specific feel. And that is the idea that they're trying to do here. But it's like, when you say that you're going to do it, you're building it up on such a pedestal that there's just no way to deliver like the most authentic Lord of the Rings, like, because you're making it up.
That's really interesting. I've never really heard of what you're talking about. So that's very interesting, thinking about Wicked as an example, that there definitely is like a specific tone. I don't know how to describe it, like, in musical terms, really, but like a vibe that is like consistent throughout the whole thing.
You either feel it or you don't, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's the point. Like, you shouldn't know how to describe it to be like, ooh, all of this music feels like it fits in this same like fantasy world.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, do you like the scores of these movies? Like, how do you feel about the music in the films themselves? Like the actual
soundtrack? Yeah. I mean, I, for one, like, and this is not the whitest thing about me, but it's up there. Like, I can fully get down with like Enya and her sort of Orinoco flow vibes that she's laying down. And she is like a big part of the scoring soundtrack of the original trilogy.
Is she really?
Literally?
Yes. Yes.
Oh. Because I like Enya. I like that
me
one
too.
Song.
Which one?
Who can
only time.
I found an hour loop of it on YouTube, and sometimes I listen to it for an hour.
Yeah, that's the song only. That's the song Only Time, Nicole. That's the song Only Time.
It's good.
I like that one, and I like Orinoco Flow, and then there's one other one that was really popular I can't think of.
Sail Away.
How does that one go?
It's Sail Away.
Ooh, Sail Away is fun.
Sail Away.
I don't know if Enya makes you super white. I think Enya is transcendent.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like the soul risen.
Yeah.
It's like a bird became light, and that light made music.
Honestly, yes, that's a perfect description of Enya's music.
So she's not like the composer, but she is she's one. She wrote a song for the movie, and I think it's used in one of the trailers. And you can see why they're kind of like a good fit. Her music can be kind of ethereal. It feels a little otherworldly in a way that's good. I did not really notice the music in this movie. I did in the original Lord of the Rings. I like the music in the original Lord of the Rings. But in this movie, the only time when I noticed the music was when they had just won. They were blowing on the big horn for some reason. I'm trying to remember why they were blowing on the horn.
Oh, that's at the end.
Yes, it was at the end.
I think they were just blowing to let you know that the war is done.
We won the war. It's time to blow the war over horn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there was like, the composer in me was like, okay, we're going to blow the horn and we're playing. So everyone is listening now because you're showing me on screen that we're playing an instrument. And whenever that has happened up until this movie at this point, it's just been like, it's like a one note horn. This one was like a series of horn chord progressions that absolutely could not have been being made by this instrument. Just no way. Absolutely not. So you think that like what you do cinematically in that thing is like, okay, you play the big noise and then you do this other horn stuff under it. Everyone will buy that. But it totally took me out because I was like, am I supposed to think that you're playing like 100 trumpets on this one big trumpet? Because you're not. The music I thought was like fine in this one. But it wasn't like, even in a movie like Avengers, like you hear the Avengers theme come on, you're like, yes, I remember this. Every time you play it, I'm like, okay. Bah, 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 bah. It's good. It's just like a good theme. I could not tell you what the theme of this movie was. Maybe if I had listened to the first two, then I would be getting like Reprise vibes from it.
I can't think of what it is.
Me either. The only thing I'm thinking of is that music video in Lord of the Rings where Pippin or the other one is just like in the window singing. I'm like, that's the vibe of Lord of the Rings for me.
There is that Lord of the Rings song that's like, ba, 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 ba,
Oh yeah, that's nice.
But that's like, that's Lord of the Rings music. So like, if you're doing Hobbit now, you can't just do Lord of the Rings music again. You did it for three movies.
You're right.
It's true. Nicole, it's time for the Shire Wire, which is our news segment.
Ooh, the Shire Wire.
Whoa.
There's a new Lord of the Rings video game on the way starring Gollum. Ah! Daedalic Entertainment is developing a new Lord of the Rings video game called The Lord of the Rings Gollum.
Ew.
You guys aren't big Andy Serkis heads? You're not
I like Andy Serkis.
Freaks?
I just don't like this little stringy-haired idiot being like, precious, and like losing the ring, and he's like killing people and eating raw fish. He's not for me.
He's not for you. He's also not for me.
The player of the game will likely control Gollum from the time he received the ring until his demise at Mount Doom and will bear witness to new, never-before-told stories about Gollum's adventure. Stealth and moral choices will likely play a big role. And according to a GameRant article, The Lord of the Rings Gollum will tell Gollum's story from start to finish and could provide a compelling narrative about mental health. Could?
What? Huh? Who do we know in real life who has gone crazy over a ring and became a shriveled up little person with big feet? Who? Who? I don't know. Nobody.
Yeah, that's a tricky needle to thread, isn't it? That's like, that feels like, well, we wanted to make a Lord of the Rings game, but also it's very meaningful about mental health because we've all been driven mad by a ring of power. I don't know. That's wild to me because there are certain video. I mean, like, I'm down for video games doing crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm generally on board. But to play a character who is like a less good hobbit than Bilbo, like, because there is the story about how he ends up with the ring in the first place. And I don't remember that.
Oh, he like kills his fucking friend.
Right. His friend just has it. And he's like, I want it. I'm covetous of that. I kill. And then like it slowly turns him into that over time. Tolkien is into that, by the way, of the like people fundamentally, because you know, the whole thing about like the orcs were elves once. Is
what?
Like a, yeah. So that's a thing that they want you to believe in this universe is that the orcs were like elves who got tortured real bad for real long and now they're orcs.
Oh, I thought they were like born out of goo.
That's what I thought.
I think when they start making new themselves, they do born themselves out of goo.
You know who this video game is for? It's for a woman who's just like really wants her boyfriend to propose, and she slowly turns into this little goblin who's like, why won't he give me the ring? I want my ring. I want a big wedding and a dress. So I do think this game is for somebody.
That's a better game though, Nicole. Like, that's a better video game. Like, it's a Lord of the Rings game where you play Katrina, and Katrina is solely driven mad by the Ring of Power, which is the wedding ring that she needs her boyfriend to buy for her. And it destroys her. The focus on marriage from our society destroys her. That's a good video game.
I truly need to see a drawing of this. If anyone out there can do that, that is necessary.
Should we take a break?
Yes.
I've got to.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Ooh, do you want to make your mom smile? Start Mother's Day with flowers or surprise her with gifts from the brand she loves. And guess what? It's delivered with the same day with DoorDash. Get 50% off your next order of up to $15 when you spend $15 plus on your next flower, convenience, grocery, or retail order now on DoorDash. And the promo code is NEWCOMERS. Listen, moms are a gift. I know that best. So give her the best this Mother's Day. Select from hundreds of expertly crafted bouquets to the best of tech to self-care essentials delivered right to the door. Get 50% off your next order up to $15 when you spend $15 plus on your next flower, convenience, grocery, or retail order now with the code NEWCOMERS. That's NEWCOMERS. Order using DoorDash today. Terms apply. Get a Mother's Day gift as unique as she is with DoorDash.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we're back.
Oh.
Okay, first, here's my issues with the movie. I hate that I already said that Smaug gets defeated, and then that fiery vagina comes, and then that gets defeated real quick. And I was like, so these things are so easy to kill? Why are we fucking worried about them? And then I had a problem with the Thorin was talking to the other Orlando Bloom with the brown hair through like a glory hole. But like they were kind of the same height at the glory hole. And I was like, that's not it. That can't be. Oh, maybe he was bending down.
Maybe he was on a rock. We didn't see the rock that Thorin
but
was
it really made me upset. I was like, can we just like really be in the world? Like, you're not the same height.
That's such a good point.
That's an incredibly good point.
Those two looked like twins to me. And I kept getting confused with who they were. And then that part where they were looking through the hole, I was like, so is this like a mirror? Like it truly was.
Right.
They were too similar.
But you know what would have been so funny? You know what would have been so funny is if they had made the dwarf the right height and every time we cut to that side, we just see the top of his head. That's a great movie.
Just his hair.
Oh, wait. Before we like go into it, John Millhiser, he wants me to mention something funny he said last night. He was like, they should have called it Back in the Hobbit. Like Sister Act, Back in the Habit.
Back in the Habit, yeah.
And they then really he... And then the guy who looks like Orlando Bloom with dark hair, he was like, that's not Orlando Bloom. That's Tampa Bloom. And he texted me to make sure that I said these things on the podcast.
Tampa Bloom.
I love
wow.
that. Well, Beach this Bloom. Movie was released in December 2014, of course, directed by Peter Jackson. And it is an epic high fantasy film written by Jackson, Fran Walsh, Philippa Boyens, and Guillermo del Toro. And
so
it is the
people.
Third and final installment in Peter Jackson's three-part film adaptation based on The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, following an unexpected journey and Desolation of Smaug. And together they act as a prequel to Jackson's Lord of the Rings film trilogy, which I did think came together very nicely in the end in a way that I found satisfying for my brain of trying to understand the timeline.
Yes.
Absolutely. Can you imagine if they had done it in one very good movie, how satisfied you might have been?
Yes. I was like, this should have been the movie. Like, there was a lot of stuff in the first two movies that I was like, who fucking cares? Like, this had all the action that I needed.
I agree.
Yes. Yeah, I think 100%. How many pages do you think this movie was to look at it? This 3-hour movie.
We heard that Peter Jackson improvised a lot of shit, so maybe it was 2 pages.
I mean, truly, much dialogue is actually... pages.
I mean, I think like half the pages were blank and he could just draw whatever he wants.
This one, I draw a big moose. Elf rides the moose in this one. I did like the reindeer. That's sort of where I'm coming to all movies, wanting them to be fantastic beasts and where to find them, which is not a good movie, but I do like to see the big
Wait, was
owls.
Fantastic Beasts, was that a book before a movie?
No.
Or is it just a movie that's okay, in the Harry Potter
world? Okay, so in the middle of Harry Potter being released, there were two very, very slim, like, quote-unquote, in-universe textbooks that were released that were to raise money for... They were for charity. But it was basically filling out the world and, like... And one of those books was Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. The other one was Quidditch Through the Ages.
So she did a book... for charity and then turn it into a movie so she could make more money.
Has nothing to do with the movie whatsoever.
Bad.
Yeah. Fantastic Beasts was just them. Like, we made so much money off Harry Potter. How do we make more? We need to keep the story going and we can't fire Johnny Depp. We need to keep him on in all of the movies. Wild. How do we keep talking about this woman?
Well, do you want to get into the in-depth summary here of our plot?
Let's do it.
It should be so fast, right? I feel like I could do it in... I feel like each of us could do it in 3 sentences if we had to.
We could, but we won't. Mm-hmm. Now, we are going to do it in 2 pages.
Okay. Yes, 2 pages, which I think
in
is...
In the spirit of The Hobbit.
The least amount? Exactly. I think this is the shortest summary.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, I'll kick it off. So Bilbo and the dwarves watch from the lonely mountain as the dragon Smaug sets Lake Town ablaze. I liked this part. Bard breaks out of prison and eventually kills Smaug with the black arrow brought to him by his son Bane. Smaug's falling body crushes the fleeing master of Lake Town and his cronies, who are escaping on a boat laden with the town's gold. Bard becomes the new leader of the people of Lake Town as they seek refuge in the ruins of Dale, while Legolas travels to investigate Mount Gundabad with Toriel. Thorin, now struck with dragon sickness over the vast treasure in the mountain, searches obsessively for the Arkenstone, which Bilbo had previously found but kept hidden. Upon hearing that Lake Town survivors have fled to Dale, he orders the entrance of the Lonely Mountain sealed off.
I don't know how I missed her getting dragon sickness.
I didn't hear that
he
either.
He has it, right? Thorin.
Thorin, not Toriel.
I got confused. Toriel has dwarf love sickness for the dwarf.
Yes, she loves that dwarf, and they're like, no. So, meanwhile, Gladderall, Elrond Hubbard, and Saruman arrive at Dol Guldur and Free Gandhi and sending him to safety with Radagast. They battle and defeat the Nazgul and a formless Sauron, the flaming vagina himself. Azog sends his son Bolgog to Gundabad to summon their second army. Wait, who is Azog?
That's his son? I didn't realize that was his son. Okay, so the guy with one arm, the big orc with one arm.
Yes.
The one, his son is apparently born. The one that that killed our friends, the dwarf and the elf in love.
Oh, right.
Oh. Okay.
The one that they're fighting.
I don't think of them as being like having a family tree.
Yeah, I feel like they're just orcs.
Yeah.
No, that's his dad. And you can really tell from the acting. Speaking of weird dad stuff, it's wild that not Orlando Bloom used his son as like the bow, right?
Yeah, wait, like did his son die?
No, I think he's fine.
Okay. Also, I was like, how come your son knows how to kill Smaug and you don't? Like, where did he get that arrow from? And also, just an arrow kill Smaug?
If you hit him right.
He has a hole.
He's got missing one scale. You got to shoot it so good.
Oh.
And I did think it was crazy, though, when he just turned his son around and he was like, if you move an inch, this is fucked, basically. Like, using his shoulder.
Oh my God. This is like in Star Wars where in Rogue One, they have to like go fucking blow up something from inside something. And it's like one thing. I'm not doing a good job of describing what I think I know. Whatever. It's also
someone
hard.
Will know out there. No, what you meant.
Someone will know.
It's
thank
very
you.
Much like every time you have to, the Smaug and the Death Star are incredibly similar in that they are big, giant destruction monsters with one very gaping big flaw, which is a little hole that if you shoot inside of it does actually kill them entirely.
Yeah,
that's a great point, Nicole. Everyone's gonna be really proud
thank
of you for that.
Thank you.
So Thranduil and an elf army arrive in Dale and form an alliance with Bard in order to reclaim a treasure once withheld from them by Thror. Bard goes to the mountain and asks Thorin for the share of gold that he had previously promised the people of Lake Town, but Thorin refuses. Bilbo sneaks out of Erebor to hand the Arkenstone over to Thranduil and Bard so they can trade it for the treasures they were promised and prevent a battle. When Bard's and Thranduil's armies gather at the gates of Erebor, offering to trade the Arkenstone for the promised treasures, Thorin angrily refuses to believe that they have the Arkenstone until Bilbo admits giving it away and chides Thorin for letting greed cloud his judgment. Outraged, Thorin nearly kills Bilbo, but Gandalf appears and shames Thorin into releasing Bilbo. That was pretty far in, I feel. Like,
yes, this is so far in. I feel like we missed so much.
We are now an hour into the movie, and the remainder of the movie will be the one big fight. That's what we've got so far. And by the way, that is like, they spend 15 seconds on telling you why the elves are here. And it's like, there are gems of pure starlight or something. And they're very bright. And we, the elves, they're ours. And we want them back extremely badly. And we will kill you for them with a whole army for this necklace and a couple others.
This summary is missing that man with the nasty teeth. Who like loves gold or whatever.
The comic book Pirates of the Caribbean villain that is in this movie.
He was so out of place.
What is
it
his
was so
name?
Strange.
I wanted him dead.
Me too. I was like, get the fuck off of my screen.
I know. Ugh. And they were going to kill him at one point and they could have killed him like 100 times. He was just disgusting. Yes.
His name is Alfred Lickspittle.
Alfred Lickspittle. Lickspittle, by the way, is a classic villain underling name.
Yeah. Really?
No, but like Lickspittle, like they're literally saying like this is a bad dude.
Now I get it.
And they should have like every non-rated PG-13 movie kills this character off like quickly and brutally.
Right.
And bad Orlando Bloom is constantly like, I know you're the worst.
Yes.
Go take care of my kids.
Yes, it's so wild.
I didn't understand that. I thought he was going to go kill them.
Same. Also, when Thorin is like gonna like throw Biblo off the ledge and then Gandhi appears and is just like, release him to, what did he say? He was like, don't damage him. And I was like, damage? Damage?
He's
gonna
die. Kill him. Yeah.
He's gonna kill him. And then I was like, how did Gandhi just like appearing make him just go, oh, okay, I'm not gonna do that anymore.
Well, I think he still wants to, right? But the other dwarves like pull him away and give him a rope. And say, go down this rope before Thorin notices that we've given you a rope. But so like they all know he's crazy, but apparently not enough to like be like, hey, dude, this Arkenstone, which I don't remember from the book, The Hobbit at all. I don't know if it's in there. I have to go check. I think it might be a thing they made up for these movies.
Oh, I'm going to Google that.
So while you Google that, I will continue.
Forge on.
Thorin's cousin Dane arrives with his dwarf army and the battle of dwarves against elves and men ensues until wereworms emerge from the ground, releasing Azog's army from their tunnels.
Oh, I hated those.
Yes, I did not like them. They were very upsetting.
I have a movie that's coming out that neither of you will want to see, and that movie is called Dune.
Oh, yeah.
People have mentioned Dune to us, and I don't know what it's about. With the orcs outnumbering Dane's army, Thranduil And Bard forces, along with Gandhi and Biblo, they join the battle, fighting the orcs. However, a second front is open when many orcs, ogres, and trolls attack Dale. So I guess the orcs, ogres, and trolls are one army, forcing Bard to withdraw his forces and to defeat the city, while Alfried takes a bunch of gold and flees from Dale to his ultimate fate. Oh, yeah. Does he die?
They don't show us in this new movie. He just takes a bunch of gold and runs away. By the way, forces of darkness showing much more unity in this war than the forces of light.
So are ogres the gigantic things that we're discussing kind of climbing around?
Yeah, probably.
Those are making me sick.
I like the one that put the brick on his head and ran real fast and broke down the wall and then passed out immediately. I did like that one. That one was very funny.
It does appear that the Arkenstone was in the books.
All right. Okay. Well, I need to read them again. I won't.
Mike is nodding yes to affirm that that is true. So inside Erebor, Thorin suffers hallucinations before regaining his sanity and leading his company to join the battle. He rides towards Ravenhill with Dwalin, Fili, and Kili to kill Isaac. Bilbo follows them, using his magic ring to move through the combat unseen. Meanwhile, Toriel and Legolas arrive to warn the dwarves of Balg's approaching army. Fili is captured and Azog kills him as Bilbo and the other dwarves are forced to watch. As Thorin engages Azog in a fight to the death, Balg knocks Bilbo unconscious, overpowers Toriel, and then kills Kili, who had come to her aid. Legolas battles Balg and eventually kills him. Thorin kills Azog, but is fatally wounded in the process.
It does seem like this is the part of the movie where they'll be like, does anyone like these guys as much as they like Legolas? And if not, should we make sure that Legolas is a pretty big part of this fight? Bilbo woke up and I was like, oh, right. You're in this movie. Mm-hmm. You've been gone from it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I know. And he's like my favorite. I think he's so charming, Martin Freeman. And
he's
like,
great.
Yeah,
he's just a really likable character. And even when he's lying, I sort of like him. And I don't know, like, I feel like I could use, he brings a lot of heart because he acts like the actor brings like such a real sort of compassionate feeling to the character that makes it not even feel fantasy. It feels like just a guy. And I like that.
I've never seen him in something where I didn't like him. Like, I don't really remember him in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but he's like great in Sherlock. Mm-hmm. I think he's very, very good. He is incredible. Like, it is incredibly easy. These orcs' heads come off real easy.
Yeah, everyone dies so easily. I think maybe the problem with the movies is you don't get enough Biblo.
Yeah.
Would love more Biblo.
Right? I think it's kind of like how Frodo, he's like very much the center of Lord of the Rings. I feel like Biblo should have been the center of this.
Frodo is a more fleshed out character by virtue of the fact that there are three books about Frodo and only one very short book about Bilbo. I guess Bilbo is in the Lord of the Rings, but it doesn't matter. They did seem to also make the decision in this one that that Bilbo can throw rocks so good. He's just like throwing rocks at orcs' heads and they're just like going down one after the other. It's like, this is incredible rock throwing power from this tiny hobbit.
It's true.
Also, when Legoland was like fighting and then like the bridge was crumbling, I did think that was pretty cool. It's kind of like Tetris-y.
I like that.
Right? That was fun. But when Thorin kills Azog, I was like, how anticlimactic that you just step back on some ice and he like falls under. And then I was like, why are you so chill? You know he's still alive. And then he was still alive. And then he like stabs him and then he stabs him. And I was like, this fight is wild. Like, somebody needs to die.
You thought he was just going to die because he went into the water? Like,
no. It was like, cut his head off or something.
He's not
dude.
The Wicked Witch.
No, but I thought that part where he like showed up under the ice and he was like, and then like stabbed him in his foot was kind of fucked up.
I like a lot of the, I mean, like, I've been dunking on it. I like a lot of the fighting in this movie, which, I mean, I better. There's a lot of it. So there's got to be at least a couple moments of it that are fun. And they are good at it. It just, I like the overly cartoony stuff, like when we're jumping on rocks to get, that are midair, to get back onto a thing. Or when Legolas, like, throws a sword into someone from way far away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's all good and fun. It's just...
Yeah.
I feel like... This one was less cartoony than the other two. Like the other two, you've got like the white water rafting scene and then a full musical in the first one. And then this one, like, there was parts that were like when Biblo's like, is this a good place to stand in the middle of the war? I was like, tee. But like, what? I was like, this is.
But what about in the, like the first one when like that big thing got killed and he was like, that's gotta hurt. And then he was like, hi.
Yeah, like it was weird that it didn't have any of that in this. So the Great Eagles arrive with Eredigast and Bjorn to fight the newly arrived orc army, and the orcs are finally defeated. Biblo regains consciousness and makes peace with the dying Thorin. And then Tyrell mourns Keely. My God, I was like, what the? You guys didn't even kiss? And she's like, if this is what love is, take it away. And I was like, nobody can scoop love out of you, bitch. Like, how are you so attached to this dead dwarf?
We had to write like a lot of the story. Like, okay, so I guess she's been pining after him. Like, she thinks about him a lot. Yeah.
I can't really. I don't know. How much time did they spend on that relationship in the previous movies?
Nothing. So they're barely. Like at the jail and he's like, ooh. And she's like, tee-hee-hee. And then Legoland is like, get the fuck away from that dwarf. You don't like dwarves. And she was like, I guess I don't. And here's now she's happens. In love with him in this one.
Here's that was happened. Truly it.
They got three movies deep and someone was like, oh shit. Are there no relationship arcs in this movie?
Yeah.
Do we actually make two movies with, oh crap. We better fix that. These two.
Yeah.
Okay.
This summary also doesn't mention that very gay villainous elf walking in or rolling in on a moose. That made me laugh so hard. Did you guys?
Lee Pace?
Yes. I love that his ride of choice was a moose.
I love that big reindeer. I love the reindeer. I love
it was a reindeer.
No, I don't know. It probably was a moose.
No, maybe it was a reindeer.
No. I'm just saying that because to me it looked like a reindeer. I'm sure it's a moose. I liked that character was doing a lot. I loved him. That's like Legolas's dad, right?
Yes, Thranduil. I like him. I wanted to see more of him.
I liked him. I liked his reindeer moose. I liked the big war pig. And I didn't like that both of those animals died.
Yeah.
That's one way to make me get off board of a movie very quickly is to give me fun big animals and then kill them for no reason.
Yeah. I also was like, with Thranduil, I was like, I need to see Brian Jordan Alvarez do an impression of Thranduil now. I felt that would be very effective.
Lauren, that is like perfect. That's, that's really funny. Yeah, you don't know Brian Jordan Alvarez. He's very, very funny.
Oh my God, look him up on YouTube.
Yes. So Thandrathrol acknowledges their love. Legoland tells Thandrathrol that he must leave. And then Thandrathrol advises him to seek out a Dúnedain ranger in the north who goes by the name Strider, who turns out to be Aragorn.
Sure does.
When asked what his real name is, Thandrathrol says he will have to discover it himself. Meanwhile, Thorin is buried with the Arkenstone along with Keely and Feely, leading to a Dane to be crowned king. But like, why bury the Arkenstone if that's what you're fucking looking for?
I did not see that they buried him with the Arkenstone. I missed that part. But I guess bury it because it's a horrible gem of corrupting evil.
Mm. Yeah, I was some of the dwarves died, even though they're my favorite, because I felt like we had to kind of shave off a few. And we wanted that to happen earlier, Nicole. Remember, like we were like, why don't some of them pass?
Yes, there was too many characters.
But we shaved off the wrong ones.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think I don't like have necessarily a huge affection for any particular dwarf character, but I like that we got rid of the ones with the most boring hair. Like the ones that had a more interesting hair are still around.
Good. We have to pick some way to choose which ones to lose.
That's the only way I'm like able to even keep track of what's going on, honestly. But okay, so as Thorin's company begins settling back into Erebor and Dale begins to recover with Bard as the leader, Bilbo bids farewell to the company's remaining members and journeys home to the Shire with Gandalf. As the two part ways on the outskirts of the Shire, Gandalf admits his knowledge of Bilbo's ring and warns him that magic rings are not to be used lightly, although Bilbo assures him he lost the ring. But if he knows you have it, how could you even tell him you lost it? Bilbo returns to Bag End to find his belongings being auctioned off because he was presumed dead. He cancels the sale but finds his home pillaged. He starts to tidy up and settle back in, and it's revealed he still possesses the ring. 60 years later, Bilbo receives a visit from Gandalf on his 111th birthday. The end.
Mm-hmm.
Or the beginning.
The beginning of Lord of the Rings.
And you just have to keep watching them in a circle over and over again.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
No.
But I thoroughly enjoyed everyone in the Shire being like, who are you? How do we know it's you?
And I was like that
how
too.
Long was he gone?
And one of them is his cousin, which he calls out immediately. Like, everyone is trying to grift him. How long is he gone? It can't be that
it was,
long.
Oh, they said it was like two years or something.
Oh, wow.
Or a year or so. Because they said, oh, no, it was 13 months. That's what they said. You'd been gone 13 months. So we knew we assumed you were dead.
Yeah. Well, no one's ever come back after being away for that long. So that makes sense.
I mean, I thought that was very cold, how they just sold everything off. And his place was so sad to me. Then coming home to the sad, I wanted him to have the toasty home that he was like longing for the entire time and nuzzle back in bed and just get to. But instead he had to like stand in a desolate sort of room that was going to be empty for a while, considering how much time he was going to have to spend getting everything back.
That's so. I'm with you, Lauren. I wonder if that's on purpose, if that's supposed to be meaningful. And I don't really want to give credit to this movie for thinking hard about anything, because I'm not sure that they did. Like you said, it does seem like they sort of made it up, but it does seem like that's the thing that he says initially, that he is going to like give up his, like, those are the things he's giving up to go off on this adventure. Mm-hmm. And he's always wanting to come back to them, and he comes back to them and they're gone, because he now knows, like, and doesn't need them, I guess, because he now has adventure or whatever. But it made me sad too to see his home like wrecked, and for some reason his like asshole neighbors took the pictures of his parents off the wall and threw them on the ground.
That was so rude.
Like,
I thought it was very funny. I was like, these people are savages. I like
they really
them.
Are
no I mean we would like to see a whole film of that. Mm-hmm. This movie grossed over $956 million worldwide, making it the second highest grossing film of 2014 behind Transformers Age of Extinction and the lowest grossing film in the Hobbit series.
Interesting. The film holds a 59% critic rating on Rotten Tomato and 74% for the audience score.
That feels right. Hmm. It's like fun, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not good, but I like, but it's like, okay, fight on the big ice thing, throw the sword, ride the eagle. That one scene when they're like fighting, where they pretend it's like Lord of the Rings light. They're doing like, remember these people from Lord of the Rings? These villains were around, where you see Sauron for like 2 seconds.
It made me so angry. And then what's her name? Gladriel. Was just like, get out of here.
And I was just like, you must go.
I was like, can you edit her voice and not make her do that?
That was a fun fight, though. The ghost fight with the ghosts that blink around.
See, I'm not here for those like weird Pirates of the Caribbean ghosts. but I will say they look better than they looked in Lord of the Rings.
Yes. And this feels like what they're trying to do here, right? They're trying to be like the Nazgul before they were Nazgul were just blinky little ghosts. And you had to hit them with this. You had to throw them off the cliff and then scream at them in your elf voice. Sorry, Lauren, what were you saying?
No, I was going to say that Scott Foundas of Variety said the result is at once the trilogy's most engrossing episode, its most expeditious at a comparatively lean 144 minutes, and also its darkest, both visually and in terms of the forces that stir in the hearts of men, dwarves, and orcs alike.
Tim Robbie of the Daily Telegraph described the film as a paragraph on steroids.
Well, truly.
Wow.
That was neither very terrible nor remotely unexpected. It's a series of stomping footnotes in search of a climax. Tim is sassy.
Savage.
But it is like, truly, I can say everything that happened in this movie in like 3 sentences, right? It's like,
I do think a paragraph on steroids is amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Inku Kung of the Rap says the 144-minute running time showcases Jackson's worst tendencies. Eons-long battle scenes, sloppy and abrupt resolutions, portentous romances, off-rhythm comic timing, and newly, in this case, patience-testing fan service. Ouch.
Oof. Wow. Well, at the 87th Academy Awards, the film received a nomination for Best Sound Editing.
Aww.
Nice. And they won the Heartland Film Festival's Truly Moving Picture Award. That seems condescending.
I mean, it moved a lot. There was a lot of movement.
Very condescending. We were truly moved by this.
We were.
At the Saturn Awards, the film won Best Fantasy Film, and Richard Armitage won Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah. Well, okay, we have a little trivia here, which is always my favorite part. Shortly after the battle begins, Bard rides to Dale to look for his children. A woman tells him she saw them in the old marketplace. When he starts to go there, a man comes running in and shouts, "The orcs have taken Stone Street." That's an inside joke. Stone Street is the name of Peter Jackson's film studio.
He's the only one in the theater laughing. He's like, "Get it?" And he's like, "Of course, nobody does." Billy Boyd, who played Pippin in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, co-wrote and performed the song "The Last Goodbye" for the end credits of this movie.
Oh,
are we supposed to watch the credits to get the song?
Lee Pace's parents visited him on set, and subsequently Peter Jackson offered them to be extras in the movie. That's really fun. They were given roles as Lake Town villagers and filmed a scene with Ian McKellen. However, according to Pace, they were cut out of the movie because his father kept hamming it up during his scene.
That's hilarious. Funny.
I love that's really that. Cute. That's very good.
But also, should I just start showing up to film sets to get roles?
Yeah.
Nicole, like, show up.
You're one of the few people on the planet that I think that might actually work. I think that they would do it. I think they would put you in movies if you just showed up.
I think
up.
So too. All you're right, like, well, what's going on over here?
Hi, hello. Can I have elf ears? Despite playing his father in the trilogy, Lee Pace, Thandardol, is 2 years younger than Orlando Bloom, Legoland. I see that. Orlando Bloom looks so old in these movies.
Yeah.
I had a moment where I was like, is that Orlando Bloom?
Yeah.
It is Orlando Bloom.
I think did they make him look younger with like CGI or something? Because
I couldn't tell.
I think they were trying to.
Something felt weird about it for
sure.
It
felt like he had an Instagram filter on because he had like the icy blue eyes, but then his like skin was kind of like smoothy, but like not. It was very strange.
Yeah. I buy all that because all elves are like immortal. So like who cares how old any of them are? They all sort of look however old they're going to look. But yeah. Legolas's dad was like maybe my favorite part of this movie.
I wanted to see more of him. He was so like sinistery sassy, which I love.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like what's her name? Ursula. Like Ursula's got a lot of personality, but she's very evil. And I love a villain like that.
This is the only movie in the Hobbit trilogy, as well as Lord of the Rings trilogy, where Legolas blinks normally. In all the other movies, he only blinks when he is surprised or injured, which it's so crazy. Is that in the book? Did they say that? Yeah. I can't remember because that was like such a weird specific, like never blink.
Yeah. Is that in the book, Zach?
Not that I recall, but I also don't remember the Arkenstone, so maybe I'm not the best person to ask.
Well, Smaug the dragon made a guest appearance. It was interviewed by Stephen Colbert on the Colbert Report on December 11th, 2014 to promote this movie. Benedict Cumberbatch, who voiced the dragon in the trilogy, also provided the voice of Smaug for the interview.
Oh, yeah. Mike had me watch a little behind the scenes of
the motion cap thing.
And I was kind of like, I found it, I mean, it's cool, but I also was like, why did he have to do this? Because he's playing a dragon that I think is mostly a drawing.
He did motion capture for this?
He's like they crawling used on the none floor.
Of it. Ooh, they didn't use Nicole, any of it. He sure did. You need to watch it because it is some like capital A acting
it is
class.
Fully like you are a dragon.
Stuff.
Get on the floor and growl at me.
He's like slithering on the floor. I actually like, it really is a moment where I'm like, oh, Benedict Cumberbatch will go 100% on whatever you tell him to do.
I bet you they didn't use any of it. I bet it was just like, yeah, if this is what you want to do, sure. Because Smaug is so much bigger than a person.
And he jumps in the air and becomes like a dolphin at one point. Like he literally flies in a circle. Like it's not possible. But I'm intrigued.
It's amazing to watch Benedict Cumberbatch do that.
You do have to look it up because it is funny. Peter Jackson met Evangeline Lilly after he finished filming Lord of the Rings trilogy, and he liked her so much that he promised to include her in J.R.R. Tolkien's other stories should they be made into film. And when they started filming The Hobbit, Lilly received a phone call from Jackson that he created the character of Toriel for her. That's nice.
Wow.
So,
that's nice.
So that character is a made up one. That's a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cause we need Kate from Lost in this movie. Doing that. She was fine. I thought she was good. She doesn't have a whole lot to do.
No, I wish she had more. I would have really rather seen her and Nick Jonas the dwarf be in their love story.
Is she?
Me too.
How many women are in this movie? And is it just her?
No,
there's
so
like three.
Oh, and In this movie, it's the humans. The humans have some women.
Yeah, they have like random townspeople that scream about stuff occasionally.
Yeah, there's Cate Blanchett.
Oh, right. Yes. Galadriel is in this one.
And then beyond that, I think that's literally it. I think there's like, in terms of speaking, it's like they scream. And also, it probably doesn't pass the Bechdel test because there's never two women talking to each other.
No, absolutely not. Lord of the Rings at no point passes. Oh, Lauren. Lord of the Rings at no point passes the Bechdel test. And also, I think some of the, I mean, you guys have talked about this before. Some of the orcs, I think, maybe were done by people of color. But apart from that, there are zero black people in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've zero, talked about zero, this at zero. Length. This is a huge issue.
But I froze it on Amazon. And one of the, you know how Amazon will do that thing where it will like X-ray tell you exactly who is in the scene you're looking at, which is very cool, by the way, Amazon Prime.
I don't think I've ever done that.
You pause a movie on Amazon Prime, it will show you like pictures and names of all of the people that have been in, like encoded to be in that scene.
Oh, interesting.
And some of them I thought were people of color, but I couldn't see them. So I was like, I guess these are orcs. I'm not sure.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
This is the only Middle Earth movie to have any profanity at all. Unsurprisingly, it's spoken by Billy Connolly's character, Dane Ironfoot. Dane yells for all the non-dwarf soldiers outside the gate of Erebor to sod off. I was like, S-O-D, suck on dick? But it's sod off, a common British insult.
All these elves can suck on dick!
My brain went to SMD and I was like, oh, SMD. Then I was like, oh no, that's definitely sod. I was like, what does sod stand for? And I was like, oh, it's British. It's a British
SMDH.
Insult.
SMDH, suck my dick head.
Suck my dick off. Oh my God.
Yeah. So that's honestly that.
We crushed that.
You did it.
We did.
Now you get to watch the Hobbit cartoon, which is much shorter, and I think you'll have a lot of fun.
Okay.
People have been telling us we will like this.
Because y'all like Return of the Jedi, right? Like, we're here for Ewoks.
Yes, yeah. We did like Ewoks. We do like the sillier things.
Me too. I'm right there with you. That's also very much how my brain works. I think you'll like it. I haven't seen it in a very long time, but I think you will like it.
Well, I do look forward to that because it's a reasonable amount of time.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch something that's not 100,000 hours long.
You did all the long ones. None of you watched the extended version of this, right?
Absolutely not. No. I would never. Why would I do that to
I had the exact same thought. I was like, dear God, what else could they possibly have put into this movie?
No, I think it's not nice to have it be a longer version. It's already so long.
It's very
long. 9 hours to tell that story.
Mm-mm. It's not nice, and I also don't know who it's for.
A lot of people, apparently. People love the extended versions of this shit.
Okay.
Which, you know, if that's your thing, that's your thing. Yeah,
go for it.
Because I watch every iteration of 90 Day Fiancé.
Okay. Same. That's your thing. I can put the hours
all
in.
All of the spinoffs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been watching Darcy and Stacey?
I drew the line there for myself, but everyone's telling me I need to watch it. So I think I'll probably have to start.
I will send you a clip that will change your mind. It is Darcy and Stacey getting spray tanned in bikinis on a tarp. Just in their front lawn.
Please send me that. I need that. That show is just the best thing on TV right now, I think.
I agree.
It's a great study of the human mind.
Well, we've come to the end of this episode.
Oh, no.
Zach, do you have anything that you want to plug?
Listen to Off Book, the improvised musical podcast that I do with Jessica McKenna that we talked about earlier. It's another podcast, which I know you listen to because you're doing one right now. That's it.
Great. Nicole, what about you?
I want to promote, make sure you're registered to vote. And this election is important, but also all elections are important. Like, we have to start voting at a state level and whatnot because trickle down economics doesn't work and neither does trickle down politics. So we got to hold people accountable at like a local and state level to have change happen up top. So that's
such a good point. I feel my whole life that has not been hammered home enough that like it really matters who you vote for in your local elections and all that stuff too. So that's a great point. And I'm going to just piggyback on that because I feel like if I said my Patreon after that, it just doesn't sound that great. So But this brings us to the Battle of the Five Stars segment. And this one comes from Baraki11 on Apple Podcasts. And the subject is so great. I'm a huge nerd and love both Star Wars and the Lord of the Rings, including The Hobbit. Listening to these two ladies go through and tear it apart is so hilarious. I really hope that they do Marvel movies next. Them watching all the Avengers movies and trying to make sense of them would be gold. Keep up the good work, ladies. Well, thanks, Brock11. Actually, I got that suggestion recently from someone as well, that would be a good world for us. I don't know anything about that.
That would be an extremely long road that you would be staring down.
I think I've only seen like Ant-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy the First. I think that's all. Yeah,
you'd be staring down the barrel of like a good 2 dozen movies.
Oh my god!
Maybe not that many, but a lot.
The only thing that I like about doing this is that I now just know everything. I'm like, I know.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I know all the Star Wars references, and it does come up a lot. Like, they're referenced in subtle ways all the time, or like, you know, someone trying to explain how like a plot device works, and they're like, it's like Star Wars. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. I now know what you're talking about. So I guess this has been really helpful in many ways.
I think it's been helpful for our journey as just actors and comedians. Well, we're going to be back next week with Paul Scheer.
Whoa.
And we'll be getting to something a little sillier to decompress from these two intense trilogies that we just made it through. So see you next week. Toodaloo.
Bye-bye.
That was a HeadGum Original.